So I think this entire conference is devoted to the idea that educational theory and educational strategy is not something that we talk about in a vacuum, and we assume that our tradition, our philosophical tradition, our halakhic tradition, have a lot to say about how we go about the job of teaching our children. What I'd like to talk to you about for a few minutes, I think is particularly fascinating because when we consider the area of Lashon Hara and how that relates to education, so it's an area in which we might find very specific halachic relevance, not merely ideas that inform our general concepts, but some very pointed halachic discussions on what is permitted, what is encouraged, and what is discouraged in the area of education. And that makes it, I think, a unique topic within this category. And as specific and as technical as it might be, that doesn't save it from a lot of disagreement. It's a very, very controversial topic. And I thought I'd just spend a few minutes sharing some of that discussion with you and trying to figure out what we can gain from the debate back and forth. So just to begin with, just as a basic introduction, so we know there is a prohibition in the Torah, maybe a few prohibitions in the Torah regarding Lashon Hara, that we're generally not permitted to say negative things about others, most likely derived from a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha, we should not go about as talebearers, as people who like talking. But we're also probably aware that there is a counter principle, a principle that is equally important, and that's the idea of toelas. When we're saying something that's purposeful, something that makes a difference, something that's important for the protection of others and maybe even the enhancement of others, so then we find that it's either permitted to say something which would otherwise be considered Lashon Hara, or maybe it's more than that, maybe it's not just permitted, sometimes it's obligatory. And that's what we call toelas. And this idea that we have on the one hand a prohibition to speak negatively, but on the other hand that's balanced constantly with the obligation to say something that might be beneficial or protect others from harm. And there's a lot to discuss. We won't be able to go into the entire background, but there's a lot to discuss about the mechanics of such a process. How exactly does that work? And just to say it very briefly, there are those who understand that Lashon Hara is primarily a character issue. It's primarily about our midos, primarily about who we are as people. We don't want to be people who are gossipy, who are negative in orientation. And therefore, if that's the way we understand it, so to say something that's going to help someone else is simply not in that category. That's not gossip. That's not enjoying negativity. That's saying something for the purpose of helping others. And maybe, if that's the way we understand it, it's simply not in the category of Lashon Hara at all. That's one way we could view it. Another way we could view it is that, no, Lashon Hara is not really about who we are as people. It's not really about character traits. It's really about hurting people through speech, saying something that could cause problems for someone else. That's the nature of the prohibition. It's not a character issue so much, but it's a practical consideration. And therefore, it should be a problem even if we do mean well in saying it. However, we have, again, a counter principle. We have an idea in the Torah of lo samod al dam reyecha, that we cannot stand idly by when someone else is at risk. If we know that the person we're talking about poses a danger to someone else, so then we have to say something. Then we have to protect that person. And therefore, it's basically a clash between two values. Normally, we wouldn't want to speak negatively. But on the other hand, we have to make sure the innocent are protected. And therefore, that becomes the overriding principle. And as many point out, the idea that there's kind of a clash between these two ideas, or a balance between these two ideas, is really suggested by the pasuk itself. Because that same pasuk, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha, continues, Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha. The two are contained within the same verse in the Torah, and therefore perhaps that's the message that we're constantly balancing the two and trying to figure out how we can observe one and observe the other at the same time. So far, so good? So there's a difference between the two perspectives, because if we say it's all about character, so then that gives us one way to look at what's permitted and what's not. And maybe in some ways it's a lower threshold, but as long as we mean well, as long as our intention is to benefit society or to benefit individuals, then it's not gossip, and maybe it's okay. But if we're looking at it from the more practical perspective, that anything that could hurt someone else is problematic, so then it's only justified because we have a prioritized need to protect an innocent party, and then maybe the threshold has to be a little bit more clearly delineated. Are we talking about something that's really dangerous? Are we talking about somebody who's really posing harm to someone else? And perhaps it's a little bit more of a delicate balance. So this leads to a whole discussion that we find in the literature about what kind of standards do we have to use to decide whether something's appropriate or not. Do we just use the idea, like the Chazon Ish, for example, felt, that if your intent is to help, if your intent is for benefit, then that's basically the only question? Or do we say, like others, such as the Chafetz Chaim in his work, where he writes that there are essentially seven conditions, some places he listed five to seven conditions involved that one has to go through in order to know what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. And that any time someone wants to undertake saying something negative for a purpose, for toelas, one has to ask the question, five or six or seven questions, whether or not it's justified. So that is a whole discussion in the literature in general. How much of a process do we have to go through? Some have one condition, some have six or seven conditions, like the Chafetz Chaim, and some count it a little differently. So, for example, there is a fascinating idea that's found in the Sefer Afikayam. Afikayam was a great Sefer of Lumdus that was written by an associate of Reb Chaim Brisker. His name was Reb Chiel Michel Rabinowitz. So he notes that we find in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, the Torah tells us about Yosef and his brothers. And the Torah tells us, Ve'aveh Yosef es dibasam ra lavihem, that Yosef would speak essentially badly about his brothers. Yosef would go to his father, would go to Yaakov, and would give bad reports about what his brothers were doing. And that's surprising, right? That seems like Lashon Hara. And Yosef's last name was Hatzadik, therefore presumably he's not somebody who casually engaged in Lashon Hara, and we have to understand what exactly is going on here. So the Afikayam suggests that, no, it can't be that there was anything wrong here, so we have to assume that Yosef was going through a process of figuring out that what he was saying was necessary. And he looks carefully at the Psukim, and he says that you find three conditions that you can learn from the Psukim. If you look carefully at the words at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, and we'll mention the second two first, and we'll come back to the last two first, and we'll come back to the first one. So one condition, he says, it's interesting that the Torah says, Ve'aveh Yosef es dibasam ra el avihem, that he brought, as if he carried the words. It's a very unusual phrasing. There's so many words in Hebrew for speech, for talking. And to say that he brought the words is not the way we normally speak. So the Afikayam suggests that the point is to show that he didn't editorialize at all. He didn't put any spin on it. He didn't add or take away anything. Just like when you carry an object, you pick something up over here and you put it down over there. Presumably it's the same object when you pick it up and when you put it down. So too Yosef, he delivered the reports in such a direct way without any kind of changing anything, without any kind of editorializing. That's one of the requirements. You have to be completely accurate. You can't change anything. You can't add anything. It has to be exactly as it happened. The second condition that we'll mention is that it's also interesting that the Pasuk says, El Avihem. He brought the reports to their father, which is a funny way to say it. If you were in a fight with your brother, so you're probably going to say to him, probably not going to say to him, I'm going to tell your father on you. You'd probably say, I'll tell daddy on you, if you have the same father, so you don't refer to him as his father. So here Yosef was talking to his own father. So the Pasuk says Yosef brought the report to their father instead of saying it was his father, is an interesting way of phrasing, and Afikayam suggests that that also shows us something, that he didn't have any ulterior motives. He wasn't thinking about anything else. It wasn't occurring to him at all that if he would speak badly about his brothers, maybe he'd score more points with his father. Maybe his father would favor him more, give him a better coat. He wasn't thinking anything like that. He was just thinking about what would be productive in order to correct his brother's behavior. Says the Afikayam, that's also one of the conditions, that your motives have to be pure. It can't be mixed in with anything else. And that was one of the conditions of the Chafetz Chaim as well. And that was a highly debated point, because there were those who felt, is that really so important that if you're saving somebody else from harm, for example, do we care so much that your motives are pure? What if your motives aren't pure? So then you have to let the other party get harmed? Is that really the case? This was a point that Chafetz Chaim seemed to say, and it was highly controversial. Is that really a condition? And that's something we'll have to come back to. But the first of the three conditions, the one that we skipped, that the Afikeyam sees here, is when you try to say something negative in order to help a situation, that's basically got to be your last resort. It's basically got to be that you can't just go to the person directly, that there isn't another way that you can solve the problem, that you feel like the only way you can help is by going to a third party. So the question could have been asked, why didn't Yosef just speak to his brothers directly? So that you also find from the Psukim, Hu Nair Espinei Bilha, the Espinei Zilpa, the Torah tells us clearly that the brothers didn't take him seriously. They thought he was a little brat, that he wasn't going to have any effect on them. So therefore, he couldn't just communicate to them. That's why he had to go to a third party. That's why he had to go to the father. So basically, from this point of the Afikeyam, from this analysis of the Afikeyam, we see three conditions about what is needed in order to permit such speech. One, that it has to be accurate and true without any kind of editorializing. Two is that it has to be properly motivated, which was a controversial condition of the Chafetz Chaim as well. And three, that there has to be no other way. You can't speak to the person directly. You have to go to someone else in order to help. Okay, so far so good. So these issues were at the core of a major debate between Reb Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, and many, many others. In 1966, Reb Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva, an Izigros Moshe, that was highly, highly controversial. And he wrote that it's not proper, in his understanding, for a teacher to try to get information about other students and their behavior by asking other students. If the teacher wants to know what's going on with the student, it's not right to ask the other students in the class, because, says Reb Moshe, by doing so, you will encourage Lashon Hara. You will be teaching the child, you will be habituating the child in Lashon Hara, and that's wrong. Now, this was very, very controversial. Reb Moshe acknowledged in his tshuva that there is a Gemara in Maseches Erchin, which does seem to say pretty clearly that one can go to someone else's Rebbe to speak to the Rebbe if there is an issue with that person in terms of correcting their behavior. But says Reb Moshe, that's not comparable to this situation. He says, in that situation, the person comes forward on their own. The person is motivated by a pure concern about what this person is doing and goes to that individual's Rebbe. But says Reb Moshe, for the Rebbe to go to a different student and say, tell me, what's going on with this guy? So it's very unlikely that that student is now going to have a pure motivation to help in answering the question. So says Reb Moshe, this is wrong. This is not something that a Rebbe should do. Now, parenthetically, the Chafetz Chaim does discuss in his Sefer that if one is not able to directly influence a person who is misbehaving, that one can go to that person's authority figure, or one should go to that person's authority figure. And he also writes that that's only true if there's no other way to address them directly. But, as others note also, that if the teacher is going to be more effective, even if, let's say, you are able to speak to the person, but you know that the Rebbe is going to get through in a much clearer, more powerful way, so then many assume that that's permitted also. And nonetheless, here's what Reb Moshe says, that for the teacher to solicit that information from another student, that's wrong. That would be a training of the child in Lashon Hara, and that's not the way to go. So far, so good? So this was a major, major controversy. And Reb Moshe himself returned to the topic many years later. The first tshuva is in Chelek Beis of Yoredei, I think it's Siman Kuf Gimel. And then later on, in Chelek Ches, he has a response to some of those who argued with him. This particular tshuva was written to Rav Meir Monk. And then he argued that, what are you talking about? We have a concept of toeles, we have a concept of purposeful speech. And if a student's doing something wrong, so then we have to correct the behavior. And if this student doesn't come forward, so then maybe the other student's misbehavior is going to go unpunished. Maybe we're not going to be able to correct the behavior of the misbehaving student. So among other points, Rav Moshe, who held his ground, he didn't concede anything on this point, and he said that even if that's true, how do you know that that's a worse consequence than training this child in speaking Lashon Hara? Training the child you're talking to in speaking Lashon Hara, Rav Moshe felt that that was worse than the possibility that the other student would go unpunished. And this was an extensive discussion in the Torah journals. There were many letters back and forth about this, many articles that were written back and forth about this. And they primarily thought that, first of all, don't we have to worry about, again, students not being corrected when they need to be corrected? Why should we necessarily assume that the child won't have proper motives? Why do we necessarily assume that that has to correlate between whether they came forward on their own and whether you ask them? And what about the issue of toelis? Isn't that a part of Hilchos Lashon Hara? Isn't that something that we also have to worry about if our job is to teach the children? So then we should be able to teach that there's good Lashon Hara and there's bad Lashon Hara, so to speak. There's Lashon Hara that's prohibited and there's that which needs to be said. And therefore, one has to teach them this message, even if that means it's a little bit complicated. So this was an intense debate. Rav Moshe wrote his first tshuva, Rav Moshe wrote a second tshuva, there was a lot written in between, and there was a lot written later. In this generation, Rav Asher Weiss Shlita has an essay in one of his farim in which he takes very strong issue with Rav Moshe. He thinks that this is not the correct approach. He says, maybe it's the approach for very, very young children who don't know exactly how to tell the difference and they're not going to be able to understand. Okay, so then maybe there's what to talk about there, but if the children are more than very young, so then it should be the Rebbe's job to be able to teach the difference between when it's appropriate and when it's not. And then he has kind of harsh language there. He says, but if the Rebbe doesn't know how to do his job, okay, then maybe Rav Moshe is right. If you can't convey the difference, then maybe you should say like that. And this was a point that Rav Moshe Sternbach also wrote to his Tshuvas. This was an intense debate going back and forth as far as how to address this issue. And there are those who make a distinction, which presumably Rav Moshe would have agreed with also, that maybe we have to distinguish between two different types of problems. That if the student is merely underperforming, so he's only hurting himself, you know, he could be learning more seriously, he could be learning more effectively, so then that's not the kind of toelis that justifies seeking out that information from another student and possibly habituating him in Lashon Hara. But if the student is posing a problem to other students, if he's a bully or if he's doing something else to be a bad influence on other students, so then we have to protect those students. And then if the Rebbe knows this is going on, is trying to figure out who it is, something along those lines, so then that becomes necessary. And Rav Moshe presumably would agree with that distinction also. It's probably likely, as many read his words, that he was talking about a more general type of investigation to see how could the student be doing better. And that's where he objected to getting other students involved. And it could be that this whole debate circles around the question a little bit that we started with. You know, what exactly is Lashon Hara about? Is it about not hurting someone else with speech? Or is it about a person's character? And therefore, that affects the threshold. What exactly is the standard for when we do it and when we don't do it? And maybe coming from the other direction, that if it's about character development, maybe there's a different concern for a teacher than there is for those in other contexts. And maybe the teacher has to be more concerned about what is going to have an impact on the student's education, and that maybe affects things as well. It's interesting that we find this concern and the distinction between young children and adults and a few other areas of halacha as well. And just to mention one, the Gemara says towards the end of Maseches Sukkah that one should not make a promise to a child, or one should not say something to a child that's not totally true. So all the commentaries ask, well, aren't you supposed to be honest to everyone? What does it mean when it says that you shouldn't say something to a child that's not true? So many commentaries understand that it means that there are times when you can say something that's not totally true. We know, for example, the Talmud says that if it's a concern of peace, if it's mipnei hashalom, so then it's sometimes necessary to say something that's not 100% accurate. But what the Gemara is saying, if you're dealing with little children, so you have to be more careful, because you could end up teaching the child that falsehood is permissible. They're not going to understand the difference. They're not going to be at an age in which they can distinguish what are the circumstances that justify it, and that could be a bad educational message. So, for example, in applying this point, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, Zecharon Levracha, once pointed out that, let's say, for example, it's very common, Maisim B'chol Yom, that somebody calls a household in order to speak to a man. And that man doesn't want to speak, or he doesn't have time, he doesn't have the inclination to speak to this person. So he tells his wife to tell the caller that he's not home. It's not really true. But he'd rather say that than say, listen, I'm home, but I just have no interest in speaking to you. You're very boring. So presumably that's okay. That's justified by the shalom consideration. That's how most assume. However, it's one thing to say that to your wife, to tell the caller that. It's another thing to tell that to your five-year-old son. Tell your five-year-old son to answer the phone and say, Daddy's not home, when he sees that he is home. So many assume that that's a problem because a child at that age isn't necessarily able to understand the nuanced discussion, isn't able to understand that there are circumstances here that make it a different story. And they come away with the message that lying is okay. And along those lines, it seems that's also where Moshe was coming from, that basically the concern was that even if there are justifications here, if those justifications aren't extremely pressing, if it's not a situation where another child is actually at risk of some kind of harm, so then we have to worry that the child's not going to fully appreciate the nuance, especially if, like Rav Asher Weiss wrote, that there are younger students involved, so then that becomes a more serious consideration. So this was a debate, an ongoing debate, still being written about how exactly to address that issue, and it's fascinating to mention, just if we have another minute or two, 5 minutes, I'll just mention how you find a few other issues where this comes up, this kind of a consideration, how we balance Lashon Hara and educational concerns comes up in a few other cases as well. So for example, there was a tshuva that was written by Rav Shammai Kahas Gross, who was one of the Dayanim in Belz, who asked the opposite question. They said, maybe we shouldn't teach children about Lashon Hara at all, because there are those who will claim that that will hurt their development if they're stifled in their speech, if they're told that there's certain things that they shouldn't talk about, so then maybe that will stifle their growth. So he didn't think so, and he brought proof from Gemara that he thought that, again, here's something where you can make the point in general about negativity, and you can also teach them that that which is important has to be conveyed, and that was perhaps the inverse of what Rav Moshe discussed. There's also an interesting literature which goes back to the question we started with. When we say something is toelus, is justified, something that's purposeful is recommended or at least allowed to be said. So the question we asked, is it okay just because it's not gossipy, so therefore any kind of positive motivation can be invoked? Or do we say that no, it's only okay because you're stopping somebody from being harmed, you're protecting the innocent, but if it is in a situation where anyone's at risk, maybe that's not necessarily justified. So many discuss the question of, let's say you have a teacher who wants to inspire the class, who wants to say something to motivate them to greater behavior, either to inspire them or maybe to warn them of the consequences of bad behavior. So you want to say, oh, I have this friend, such and such, and he did this, he spoke a lot of Lashon Hara, and look how terrible his life worked out, so you don't want to be like him. So is that warning about Lashon Hara itself an act of Lashon Hara? So that was a question that the authorities discussed, and it seems to revolve around this issue, that if it's about hurting someone through speech, you are hurting this person. So then it's only justified if they're really a risk to someone else, which may not be the case in this kind of voluntary example. But if it's about anything that's not gossip, maybe that can be justified. It's interesting, there's another question that is kind of a machlokus between the poskim and Klal Yisrael. That Klal Yisrael has basically decided that this issue is permissible, but a lot of the poskim are not so sure, that if you speak Lashon Hara, so to speak, without mentioning the name of who you're speaking about, let's say you successfully conceal the identity, so we assume, Klal Yisrael assumes that that's okay as long as you leave out the name. The poskim weren't always so sure, and the concern seems to be the same issue in the other way, that if the issue is not hurting someone through speech, so if you leave out the name, so names have been left out to protect the guilty. But if it's an issue of character, of midos, so that's still an act of gossip, even though you're not identifying who you're talking about, it's still indulging in negativity. So you could combine these two questions, and you say if the teacher wants to inspire or warn the class, and they tell them about a cautionary tale, but they leave out the name, that should be okay according to everyone, because it's neither motivated by gossip, nor is it going to hurt anyone because we don't know who we're talking about. So taking both into consideration, that should be okay according to everyone. If we have time for one more point, it's fascinating also just to consider Now, one may have thought from some of this discussion that the only justification, let's say, to share negative information with a Rebbe or with a parent is if that negative information will help the Rebbe or the parent correct the behavior of the child. And therefore, it's justified purposefully. However, many argue that that's not necessarily the only situation. Rav Moshe Kaufman was the author of a sefer called Nesiv Chaim, which is a contemporary commentary on the Chafetz Chaim, a very influential sefer. And he suggested that this is a part of the basic love that a parent has for a child. The parent wants to know how the child is doing. So therefore, the parent's going to ask, how is the child doing? What's going on with my kid? And it's not the case that the Rebbe should say, I can't talk to you about the kid, it's Lashon Hara. That's not the attitude. The understanding is that the expression that a parent has of concern about the kid, that the concern for the child, that itself is an act of love that's necessary for the parental bonding. And therefore, that's also a justified discussion. It doesn't only apply only in situations where there's a possibility of correcting the behavior. And therefore, if that's true about a parent, he writes, that could be true about a Rebbe as well, about anyone who's in a loving, concerned relationship for this child. And of course, also that could be abused by somebody who's curious, somebody who just says, oh, I care about this person, I want to know what's going on in their life. So it's clear that one can take this to the wrong extreme, but at the same time, it doesn't change the principle that the basic interest that the parent or the teacher has in the child also is a justification for discussion under the right circumstances and with the right level of care, and that's also one of these considerations. So I assume we're probably almost out of time, so just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there is a prohibition in speaking badly about people in general, but that's also balanced by the idea that we have to say that which is necessary for protection of others or for benefit of people in general. And we talked about the question, what is the nature of the prohibition of Lashon Hara in the first place? Is it bad character traits, in which case intent for positivity is simply not that trait? Or is the idea that it's about not hurting others through speaking about them, in which case even when it's purposeful you are hurting them, and the only thing that justifies it is the other half of the verse that says, Lo samar al damriyacha, you have to help people who are at risk, and therefore even if you have to talk about somebody negatively, do that, that's justified. So we talked about the Afik Eyam's point about the three different conditions he saw in the Pesukim about Yosef. In general, there's a whole debate about what kind of conditions are there. Is it just one condition of having positive intent, or there are as many as seven different conditions, and the Afik Eyam had three, that it should be with accurate information, no editorializing, it should be with pure motive, which was one of the Chafetz Chaim's intentions, which was quite controversial, and that it has to be, there's no other way, so you speak to the teacher or the authority figure, because there isn't any path to discuss it with the person directly. So this was a big topic of debate with Rav Moshe Feinstein and others. Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuva wrote that a Rebbe should not solicit information from another student about a third student, because he'll be habituating that student in Lashon Hara. And many others very intensely disagreed. They said, what about the fact that this other student might go unpunished? What about the fact that this is a part of the laws of Lashon Hara, that there's good and bad, and the student has to know what to do? What about the fact that motivation isn't necessarily impure in a situation like that? There was a whole lot of debate back and forth, Rav Asher Weiss and others writing that this is only applicable to very young children, but for older children, the Rebbe should be able to tell the difference. We mentioned how we find also in other areas of halacha a distinction between very young children and others in the Talmud's discussion that one should not say something false to a young child, and even though you shouldn't say something false to anyone, but with adults sometimes there are other considerations such as shalom, but with a child, so that's also not going to necessarily be understood, and therefore one has to take an even greater concern to be absolutely honest when dealing with children. So that's a part of the discussion. There's a whole back and forth about this, and presumably a distinction between a student who's going to be a threat to other students, a bully or some other type of threat, where presumably Rav Moshe would agree also that you have to do whatever is possible in order to protect the other students, while if a student is simply underperforming, only hurting himself, I think that's where this debate really exists, and it goes to the questions of character versus practicality and all of that discussion. Then we discussed how this comes up in a few other cases. Rav Shammai Kahas-Gross's truth about maybe you shouldn't teach them about Lashon Hara at all because it'll stifle their expression, and how he didn't really accept that consideration, and about the question of what if you want to inspire your class, you want to give a cautionary tale, a warning about how this person got in trouble and you could get in trouble too. So that also seems to revolve around the two possibilities, and everyone would probably agree that you probably are safe on all sides if you don't mention the name of who you're talking about and you use it to inspire the students. And then finally we spoke about this point that Moshe Kaufman and others discussed, that it's not only if the parent or the teacher is going to be able to correct the behavior that it's worthwhile speaking to them, that when a parent or a teacher asks about how a student is doing, so that's an expression of love and concern that is a natural part of their role, and therefore that's also a legitimate discussion. And even though one can take that to a unjustified extreme, the principle is still true, and hopefully as teachers and parents we're able to internalize all of these values and get the balance right with enough effort, and hopefully through modeling that balance we'll be able to convey that to our students and our children, and hopefully we can be at least somewhat successful in this very complex mission. Thank you all very much. A wonderful day. Yeah, good to meet you.